This is the Lombardi Line with Michael Lombardi and Patrick Maher on VSiN.
Welcome back in. It is hour number two of the Lombardi Line, your home for all things NFL betting 7 days a week on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Back with the former college football national champion and NFL wide receiver Mike Pritchard. I'm Ben Wilson. Big second hour for you on the Tuesday edition of the show, as we're with you every single Tuesday from downtown Las Vegas. Josh Applebaum joining us in a half hour, host of the Market Insights podcast and VSiN Daily Morning Bets. Mike, as we get ready, though, for week three, we've started to see the line movement and the market begin to take shape. And there are some games that jump out as being true marquee matchups, including one that probably would not have been on most people's list of marquee matchups for week three when the season started. Yet here we are, 2-0 Miami under a first-year head coach in Mike McDaniel, who is your leader in the clubhouse right now for Coach of the Year, taking on a Bills team fresh off of a demolition of Tennessee last night, 41-7. 2-0 Buffalo in Miami, laying 5.5 now. This is ticked up from 4.5 to 5.5, Mike. On the Miami side, since we did the whole autopsy first hour on Buffalo's Monday night performance, how real is this Miami start? Let's just start there.
Well, it's real, and respect it, at least for me now, because I didn't have any respect for Tua and what he could do at quarterback for Miami. And I think a lot of people didn't either, and I'm talking about the league, but he's proven a lot of people wrong, and he's earning a lot of respect right now, too. So, you have to be aware of that. You also have to be aware of a divisional game. Last year, you think about the Dolphins, highly competitive, 4-2 in the division. Buffalo was 5-1 in the division that way, too. So what I focused in on with the AFC East, too, in particular, was last year they had two of the top 10 scoring teams in the league last year, Buffalo and New England. Now it could be Buffalo and Miami. It's very interesting. So this game is highly appealing, a lot of different angles that go. I will say, like I said earlier, Buffalo has established themselves as an offense that can dictate. It took the fourth quarter against Baltimore for Miami to get revved up and certainly exploit some flaws from Baltimore there on the road. But you got to give them respect for that. 28 points in the fourth quarter. But you have to possess the football, and Buffalo has shown the propensity to do that. And then on top of that, score points. So Baltimore could not possess the football. They had big plays all over the place, but they could not keep the ball away from Miami. If they possessed it a little bit more in that fourth quarter, Miami doesn't make that full comeback. Yeah. So Buffalo is going to be a different animal altogether for Tua, because that defense, even on a short week, I think it's going to be prepared for that offense.
After the 36 of 50 performance, 469 yards, yeah, and 6 touchdowns and 2 interceptions. And from your perspective, too, and you were a fast wide receiver when you played as well, a lot of people thinking when Jaylen Waddle and Tyreek Hill were added into this mix for Tua, you think, oh, this should be easy, right? These guys are fast, just get them out into space. But that wasn't the way it worked out, at least last year under the scheme. And Jaylen Waddle, despite playing through injuries, was a guy who was seldomly targeted in the scheme as a rookie a season ago under Brian Flores. How have they been able to at least get those guys open from what you've seen in the first 2 weeks?
Well, I mean, a lot of his speed, I mean, a lot of concentration too would be on Tariq Hill. He's going to command so much attention, and now you have Waddle going deeper. So
do you think that the addition of two makes it just so much harder when you have two dynamic speakers?
Right, and then to be able to protect, too. Like, if you think about Baltimore from a pass-rushing standpoint, okay, they're an aging roster. You think about New England, too, from a pass-rushing standpoint early on, which Tua and that offense kind of struggled. They got a defensive score in that game. And but if you provide time, then I think with the speed that they have on the offensive side of the ball, Tua's going to be able to find that and get the ball to him, underthrow or not. They're going to be wide open a lot of times. But with Buffalo now, there's key injuries with Buffalo. I mentioned Hyde, so that could affect things as the developments through the week. The corner, too, that's in the hospital, he's not going to play with a neck injury, not so soon. So they're down numbers in the back end, but can that pass rush be disruptive enough against Miami and that offense? And if they are, then I don't care how fast you are on the outside, you have problems that you have to solve at the line of scrimmage.
And this total's already up to 54. Most books, still some 53.5s out there, opening 51 and getting steamed on that side too. So all the money early on the over and to the Buffalo side. You mentioned, though, the offensive line, which if you looked at most of the reputable sources for preseason position-by-position rankings, Miami's offensive line, even with a couple of offseason upgrades, Teron Armstead being the notable one at left tackle, didn't have Austin Jackson, one of their main guys on the right side of that offensive line, still worked last week. but they graded out as a bottom 10 unit, even if you were being optimistic about some of those additions, Mike. And yet, if you look at the data through 2 weeks, Miami has done the best job of any offensive line in the league at saving potential sacks from pass blocking. They've so far saved on the metrics here. Pro Football Focus published this after the Sunday games were completed. About 2 sacks that normally would have been taken, they have prevented Tua Tagovailoa from taking just naturally. By far the best mark so far of the league. I naturally wonder, how sustainable is that? Did we just get an O-line that had a couple of good matchups early against, as you mentioned, aging defensive lines in New England and Baltimore? Or is that something you actually put stock into so far with how good they've been?
Well, they've been okay, but I put more stock into the opponent because now it's different. I mean, New England was a familiar opponent, but Buffalo's a familiar opponent with the best defense that got better. McDaniel, he's a genius. He really is from an offensive standpoint, and he's had no resistance in terms of freedom calling plays, and he's been highly creative. So, maybe they have a package in store for Buffalo, working on that. But if you look at matchups, I mean, just on the offensive line alone, Armstead's only one tackle, right? And so, again, I just talked about how versatile Buffalo's defensive line has been and can be. I mean, Big Phillips is a defensive end at times. And so passing situations are going to be different. Obvious passing situations are going to be different than they were last week for Miami.
And when you think about, in addition to that, the fact that Miami worst defense by yards per play through 2 weeks, Buffalo number one defense. Just, again, yards per play can be somewhat of a misleading stat, but it's a good baseline to start at just on how a defense is performing play to play. You can do the same thing looking at offenses as well. Miami last in the league in yards per play through 2 weeks, and yet they are 2-0 so far, and it'll be a big test there. Buffalo on the road laying 5.5. I wonder where that line gets to, Mike, where the buyback point comes for Miami, because 5.5 in that, as usually considered a dead number, at least by our terminology in the Vegas marketplace. But if this hits 6, do you see buyback, or would it take 7 for people to really be interested in Miami?
Well, there is a tax on Buffalo. I mean, they are hyped, and then obviously
no
the performances, right? And you wonder where that tax is going to be. But looking at Miami, too, again, a familiar opponent with the Patriots. 3 points in the first quarter, 14 exploded. Obviously, a scoop and score offensively. But then in the second half, they got shut down, though. And so Buffalo, a familiar opponent, again, now Tyreek Hill, Buffalo has played Tyreek Hill. McDermott has played Tyreek Hill, right? And so it's like, I don't know. I mean, Buffalo right now, 5.5 here. If it goes higher, obviously you're not going to chase it. Don't do that. Maybe people will feel like they're chasing it now, but there is a tax involved. So yeah, just be careful of that number though.
Seems like a popular money line parlay.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
With these teams on the road, especially South Florida early season,
we
just say express caution.
Yeah, put it this way. If it ticks up, I'm teasing you, I think.
I think you will not be the only one who do that. This next game we'll talk about opened as a definite teaser candidate, but we've seen a flip of favorites as we're talking marquee matchups in week 3, and the big move having to do with a big injury, and then B, disappointing performance from the home team in this spot, and that is San Francisco at Denver, your Sunday night football matchup in week 3. We'll start with the Trey Lance, Jimmy Garoppolo piece of this, Mike, where we see the report yesterday from Adam Schefter. It is confirmed to be season-ending ankle surgery for Trey Lance. Also suffered the broken fibula in that win over Seattle early in the game, second drive into the red zone when Lance goes down for the 49ers. And this whole idea of the insurance policy for keeping Jimmy G around, it comes to fruition, leads them to a comfortable 27-7 win in that spot. You think about where we're at with the 49ers in general. If we just start from the power rating angle, where you view San Francisco today with Garoppolo as the starter versus Lance, how much higher up does San Francisco go in your eyes? And how much trust do you now have in them going on the road to face Denver?
Well, first of all, Jimmy G is an insurance policy. All offseason, they worked with Trey Lance to become the starting quarterback, and Jimmy G had surgery. He was on the sideline, and now he's being incorporated as a starter, and it's like he has some work to do to catch up, I think. Now he's going to have a full week of practice, highly familiar with the playbook. I think Kyle will go back to the Jimmy G playbook. So that gives you confidence there, but he still has to prepare. He missed training camp, if you think about it. And so coming in as a backup is different, but now you're the starter, and now your tendencies are going to appear to Denver. And so it's a different animal right there. And again, we just talked about chasing numbers. But on the other side, it's chaotic with the Broncos. And I'm going to read you and everybody else out there this information.
Former Denver Bronco Mike Pritchard. Very tied into that market.
I am. Someone who I trust talked about how they didn't – why is the internet kind of messing me up here? Why they didn't –
this whole thing set up.
I know. I'll get there.
I'll filibuster while you're looking it up.
I got it. Didn't focus on the head coach the whole game, but was taken back when during the entire defensive series, there was a key series in the game in Denver. Hackett was off the sideline back at the quarterback player bench, diagramming or showing charts to the quarterback, Russell Wilson. So as a head coach, he's not even involved in the game. He's become an offensive coordinator, right? And that's
different.
Which
is what he used to be.
Which is why he's failing as the head coach right now with some key decisions. I mean, if you want to be, and Michael Lombardi said this, if you want to be an offensive coordinator, be the offensive coordinator. You're the head coach now. You got to delegate. You have to do that. You have to trust that system. And you got people in place to do that. Quarterback's coach. Or he can get on the phone and talk to the coordinator upstairs. But for Hackett to do that as a head coach, I think that's very telling right now. Where the state of affairs right now for the Broncos.
And we see how this line, the look ahead was Broncos -3 hosting San Francisco. I don't know how much of this is of the line move is how awful Hackett and how over the head he has looked in two games as a head coach, and how much of this is now having at least a reliable quarterback. Mm-hmm. That's the perception on Jimmy Garoppolo in at quarterback, because this is flipped from Broncos look ahead -3, open -2.5. It's now the 49ers favored by 1.5. We'll continue the discussion next on this Denver side. I need your thoughts on what we're seeing out of Nathaniel Hackett through two games as a head coach, more in-depth than what you just talked about. We'll do that next. Josh Applebaum joins the show as well in about 20 minutes right here on the Lombardi Line.
You're listening to the Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
Horse racing fans, First Bet wants to invite you to enter their free sweepstakes to win a trip to Santa Anita Park on October 6th through the 9th. The grand prize package includes airfare, hotel, tickets to the races, plus a $1,000 betting voucher from First Bet. Head on over to VSiN.com/horses to register. I wonder if that's where Patrick Maher is today. Guy lives in L.A. Make himself a little nice drive down to Santa Anita. In for Patrick Maher, we are today. Patrick back on Thursday. Michael Lombardi back on the show tomorrow. I'm Ben Wilson with Mike Pritchard here for our second hour of the show. Josh Applebaum, host of the VSiN Daily Morning Bets, will join us in our next segment. But want to continue the conversation on one of our marquee games of Week 3. San Francisco now laying 1.5, going to Denver. It's a 1-1 start for the Broncos, 0-2 against the number. I had Denver in multiple teasers over the weekend, down to -3, and was about to lose my mind, although I was on the air, so I had to try to stay professional on Live Bet Sunday.
Good thing.
We talk about level of panic and how maybe Week 1 can be overreaction, but now we've had 2 weeks here of actual data and eye test to look at with these teams. You mentioned earlier, Nathaniel Hackett, you don't believe he's doing a good job of delegating, especially when it comes to offensive play calling, and it's resulted in maybe a lack of awareness on game management. We didn't see it exposed against Houston because the Houston Texan offense was absolutely anemic in a 16-9 win for the Broncos. But in a matchup against an elite NFC team like a San Francisco, who is second in the NFL in defensive yards per play allowed so far through 2 weeks, how much do you view Hackett getting exposed in a game like this Sunday night at home against San Francisco as a home underdog?
Yeah, you know, it's fascinating that the Broncos are now home underdog in a situation, but even with Russell, right, the impact of Russell Wilson in that trade. But here you go, and I don't think it's all about Jimmy G now being the quarterback there with San Francisco. There's issues in Denver. I mean, I thought Denver was overrated beginning of the year, and it's carried over. The way that they attacked training camp was not the way that you get ready for this schedule at the beginning of the year, especially the San Francisco 49ers. I mean, now the Denver Broncos have shown some physical play at times. They want to run the football, but not consistent the way that they want to be. Russell Wilson throwing the football now, he's losing weapons on the outside. Tim Patrick goes down. Jerry Judy's got a rib injury. KJ Hamler has the knee from the ACL situation on top of some hamstring issues. Cortland Sutton at best is a 50-50 guy. He's not like a guy, a reliable, let's go to him, let's throw the ball to him 20 times a game, we'll be fine. He's not that. So they have issues there offensively, and now you have issues within your coaching staff because Hackett and Russell Wilson has an office on the same floor as the coaches. And Hackett's conferring with Russell as opposed to going through the chains of command, maybe, like quarterback's coach or offensive coordinator. And he's a head coach, and he's sitting down on the sideline with the other coach who is the quarterback, which is fascinating to me. And I don't know how long that dynamic can work or or establish itself even. And now on the other side of the ball, key injuries, Justin Simmons, the safety's out. Patrick Surtain got hurt. We'll see about his availability too. San Francisco, we talked about dictating. I think with Jimmy Garoppolo and the physical nature of the running game, they're going to want to do that again. So it's a tough matchup, in my opinion, for Denver, who's they also have offensive line problems. I mean, Denver was overhyped and overrated to begin the year, and I think they're going to take some time to fix that out and figure it out.
And what you wonder now is, from the offensive production standpoint and actually finishing drives, you just have to wonder, what are the numbers actually telling us, and can there be an improvement here on the big plays once you get into opponent territory?
Right.
Because Denver, so far, the numbers would indicate they are doing everything right, especially on the offensive side of the ball. They're seventh in yards per play so far through 2 weeks. Eight of their 11 drives, Mike, on Sunday against Houston, get at the very least into opponent territory. Eight drives out of 11, and yet you come up with 16 points combined.
Right.
16 points when you had eight drives getting into opponent territory. When you look at that, what's your fix if you're Nathaniel Hackett and you're Russell Wilson, when you're, as you mentioned, they're obviously conferring amongst each other, probably in private. What's the fix if you're Denver when you're moving the ball, but you still are finding ways to shoot yourselves in the foot?
I don't know if they know what the fix is because they have to figure it out. They didn't work in preseason, so they're trying to figure it out on the sideline. They're drawing up plays in the dirt, man. That's what they're doing right now.
Drawing up tight end end-arounds on third and one at the edge of field goal range to get blown up? Because that's clearly what it's looked like.
But I always ask myself this question, what do they want to do versus what can they do? And you got injuries now. What can the Broncos do? From a consistent standpoint, offensively, they haven't proved to me that they can do a whole lot. And consider the opponents, the Seattle, a very vanilla defense. And then when Jamal Adams goes out, I mean, really vanilla. And then you think about Houston defensively too, just not enough pieces yet for Lovie and what he wants to do. But yet the Broncos offense still struggled. Now you're going up against a Super Bowl caliber defense and Joey Bosa, right? Nick Bosa, sorry. And then so you got all these issues on top of your opponent. And I think if you eliminate turnovers for Jimmy G and San Francisco offensively, they should be able to move the football. They have continuity on their side.
A big reason why we've seen that flip of favorites. It's not just, as you talk about, not just the continuity for Garoppolo and the 49ers offense. It's also these struggles, which we've talked about last week. We did not view it being just a one-week flip of the switch necessarily for Hackett and the actual game flow of how that all works out as a head coach, even though, of course, Mike, I did lay 10 with Denver. I was at least expecting for one game the sample size to look good. Didn't work out. But again, those are the reasons why we've seen a big flip of favorites there. Broncos have fallen out, still 9.5 on the win total, but a distant third favorite in the AFC West at +350. There are some concerns, though, injury-wise, Mike, within this division. You see how the odds have reflected the Week 2 performances. Chiefs now -105 after holding on to beat the Chargers, who get in the back door at +240 now, your second choice to come out of the AFC West. But for LA, the issue is Justin Herbert, who fractures rib cartilage day-to-day is the report coming out of LA, and they host a Jacksonville team that has looked very game through 2 weeks, loses on a last two-minute touchdown pass from Carson Wentz in Washington Week 1, lose that game by 6, and then shut out Indianapolis 24-0 in Week 2. Right now, we haven't seen much movement on this game from a line standpoint because of the uncertainties surrounding Justin Herbert and his health.
Right.
Laying 7 at this point looked really bad, and he was able to, I don't know how he gutted his way through the end of that game against Kansas City, but what do you do with a game like this? And what do you do if you're LA trying to manage your franchise piece in Justin Herbert, given that it is such a
painful,
tough injury to try and ask a guy to play through?
Yeah. You can play through it. It's painful. And Coach Staley talked about the comfort level of Justin Herbert. Where is that going to be? Do you see the irony in this, though?
It's kind of funny.
I mean, Tyrod Taylor.
Yeah.
has a punctured lung because he's getting a block, but he gets a punctured lung, and therefore Herbert is a starter. And now
it's the rib.
It's the cartilage, so a rib, and it's like, is he going to trust that doctor to give him another injection here? I mean, yeah. This is incredible, but it's real, though. Like, if you're Justin Herbert, are you going to trust that doctor who punctured the lung of Taylor? Or, I mean, what are you going to do with that?
I don't even want to think about that.
I mean,
that.
I think it's real, because that's what he's going to have to do. He's going to have to get a block, because, you know, is he going to do what's necessary to play a game? That's code for he's going to take a shot or he's going to get it dead. And I mean, he's probably going to have a bigger flat jacket too. But I play with quarterbacks. They get hit in the ribs all the time. And that injury is something that you can play with if you can stand it. Right?
I remember John Elway, 96, 97 seasons. He was hurt basically. I remember he had a rib injury basically the entire year. And Denver, it was very odd. They sat him some games. They would try to suit him up and see how he felt, but were very quick to pull him. Mm-hmm. In the era we're in now, though, Mike, 2022, 18-week, 17-game season, what do you do? How do you handle this if you're the Chargers?
I don't know. I think it's a delicate situation because they're facing a lawsuit from Tyrod Taylor in the fact that he got his lung punctured.
It was already curious before you added that layer on top of it.
Now, I don't know if it's the same doctor. I mean, we usually have two team doctors, and if you're Justin Herbert, you're probably going to the other doctor if you can, but we'll see. I mean, that's the week of practice. What you do with this game at this moment, Justin Herbert, the throws that he made in that game against Kansas City, even when hurt, if he's good to go and a comfort, I mean, I'd love the situation with the Chargers.
Seven, getting them at home against the Jacksonville team. Do you believe it will be kind of overrated in the market when you think about how Jacksonville shut out Indianapolis? Right. It's like, how much of that do you put on the ineptitude of an Indy offense led by Matt Ryan, or how much of that do you put on a young and inexperienced but growing Jacksonville defense?
Yeah, I mean, they are growing. Same thing with Trevor Lawrence too. He's a generational talent, and he's growing. He's going to get better too. And a teaser. I mean, even with Justin Herbert, you're more comfortable if you can find a teaser leg that you're attracted to, certainly with the Chargers.
Even with a compromised Herbert, if he goes, a teaser leg you'd look at.
For me, I mean, seven is just too much with the unknown of Justin Herbert.
I understand that. I remember one of those games, we were talking 96 Packers earlier, John Elway hit one of those years with the rib injury, sat him for Bill Musgrave in a game against the Packers in 96.
I know Bill well.
When the Broncos were 13-1 and they sat Elway for Musgrave, it did not go well for Denver. Josh Applebaum, host of the Daily Morning Bets Show at VSiN, joins us next.
You're listening to The Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
Start your football season on the right foot by subscribing to VSiN Pro. Get full access to everything we do, including our daily picks at a glance recap of the top plays made by VSiN show hosts and guests, 24/7 video, season prep, including our weekly college and pro football matchup guides covering every game all season long, pro tools like our exclusive betting splits, and pro tips updated every hour with actionable insights to up your betting game. Sign up on our discounted football special and get VSiN Pro access to everything we do from now through the Super Bowl for only $175, or save 50% off the monthly price with an annual subscription and bet smarter all year long. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe for all your options and become part of the Sports Betting Network. Certainly hope you've been taking advantage of that. As we welcome you back to the Lombardi Line, I'm Ben Wilson with Mike Pritchard in for Patrick Maher, who's back Thursday, and Michael Lombardi back with us tomorrow on the show. A guy you hear every single day on VSiN Daily Morning Bets, one of our newest podcasts you can get wherever you subscribe to your podcast, as well as the Market Insights podcast. It's Josh Applebaum joining us as he does each and every Tuesday. Josh, the sky was falling in Foxborough after week one, but you're out in Boston. Pats get the job done, even if it wasn't the sexiest of wins over the weekend. And a lot of line move there, Josh, going to the Pats, got up to -3, and they hang on, 17-14 win. So how you feeling there in Beantown this week with the 1-1 start?
Well, Ben and Pritch, it's great to be with you. I'm cautiously optimistic. I'm not super excited. Again, we got a lot to iron out here with the offensive coordinator, Patricia calling plays, but I think it was a step in the right direction. But I think more importantly, Ben, you know, what's important to me is kind of looking at that line movement. That was a great microcosm of what I like to look for when I'm betting a game. So, you know, my basic things are, I want to be against the public, I want to be with the sharps, I want to beat the closing line. And I think what was interesting about that Patriots game is just the fact that when it opened, it was such a fishy number. They were laying 1.5. How can you make, you know, what are the odds makers doing? How can they make New England a favorite when they look so bad in Miami, whereas Pittsburgh had that big win there against the Bengals? But that would be kind of a classic fade the trendy dog play. Even though New England was only getting, you know, around 25% of bets, that line moved in their favor, -1.5 up to -3. And this is really why I like to money line these short favorites, because if you laid the three late with New England, you push, you money line, you win. And that was very similar to last night, guys. Obviously, if you laid the points, you still covered with Eagles. But the kind of the comparison there was, it really became a trendy dog in favor of Minnesota. When you looked earlier in the week, it was Eagles like laying 3 down to 1.5. It looked like early money was going Minnesota. But one thing I've learned over the years betting NFL, don't lock yourself in too early into a bet. Because if you went with that early move Minnesota, it made sense. The line was going in their favor. But two things. One, late buyback was all over Philly. Really important to me, that late buyback, that late movement before you get to kickoff, because that's when limits are raised and big bets come in. But also, it became a really trendy dog. Minnesota ended up getting like 65-70% of bets. So to me, I want those gross dogs. You guys know the hazmat dogs, as Pritch and I always used to talk about. It's those dogs that get really popular that I want to bet against. So, you know, Eagles cash yesterday, Pats cash on Sunday. That's kind of a microcosm of what I like to look for when betting the NFL.
So this next game I want to ask you about is right up your alley, because I always was fascinated by the data-driven betting approach that you have, Josh. And so here's where it doesn't trip me up at all, but I'm curious about how you interpret this situation, though. With San Francisco now a 1.5 favorite, but yet the bets are 76%. Cited with San Francisco. Obviously, there you got a dog situation with Denver and a contrarian situation too, but you don't want to chase the steam with San Francisco. So help me out from a data-driven approach here. What do you do with a game like this?
Pritch, I'm glad you let off with this one, because this is like, you know, Godzilla versus King Kong. I have like good stuff on both sides here. Like number one, let's just start with the movement. It's going all towards San Francisco. You know, a lot of shops open. Some shops are like Denver laying 1.5 at home, or Denver even laying like 2. Now it's flipped all the way to 49ers -1.5. So to like the 49ers right off the bat, we have dog to fave line movement. Also, I think there's a big coaching mismatch there. Shanahan in favor of Hackett. Hackett's a guy that, you know, Pritch, I'm just not too confident. Maybe he'll learn on the job and get better, but I'm not really a fan of laying points with him. You saw against Houston, they were a 10-point favorite. Obviously couldn't cover that number. So on the one hand, Lions going to San Fran. I'm actually leaning on a money line play towards San Fran. But Pritch, this is why betting the NFL is difficult. We have a good move toward the 49ers. You can money line them around -120. I actually think going to Jimmy G, I like the 49ers more than when they had Trey Lance. But also, are they going to become really popular here, Pritch? Like, you know, they're across the market getting, I think, like 65, 70, 80% of bets. They do have a little bit more money here. My one thing would be, if we see this continue to rise and it gets all the way, like, I don't know if it will, but do you see that San Francisco money continue to pour in, get them up to -3? You could interest me in a buyback Denver +3 at home, contrarian primetime game. But as of right now, Pritch, it's not a perfect play. I don't love that it's so popular, but I'll be leaning towards San Fran here on the money line based on that dog to fave move.
And you can follow Josh and see all of his work at Josh_insights on Twitter. And you think about some of the reaction to these primetime games, Josh, and we talked last week about some of the overreaction. What about, you mentioned the Minnesota spot ended up being a lot of people were backing the dog late in that week and ends up not working out. Philadelphia easily wins and covers there 24-7. And we're already seeing a lot of movement towards Detroit in this week 3 matchup. Minnesota and on the opener around 8. Down to -6. Lions looking great in week 2 win over Washington. What do you do in spots like these where you have a team in Minnesota look so bad in a primetime spot against this young team with a lot of buzz in Detroit here, who is certainly getting some respect there in the market, now down to 6-point road underdogs there in Minnesota?
So another one here, Ben, where it's not a perfect play, because as you mentioned, you know, typically when I want to bet, I want to look for a contrarian value, not just bet against the public, but buy low on a team that didn't play well, sell high on a team that did play well. That's so you can take advantage of kind of overvalued or undervalued bets. So to your point here, Ben, Minnesota opened -7. They're down to 6. You know, that's a big overnight move there or the last couple of days toward Detroit. You know, they would match for me divisional dog. They're around 54% the last few years. Also, Dan Campbell has been really good covering numbers. He's 13-6 now ATS as a dog. So he's done very well. But as you mentioned, will this turn into Detroit, you know, getting 65, 70% of bets? My one angle here, though, which I think is a benefit to Detroit, is a bit of a rest advantage. You know, obviously Minnesota played last night, short week, Monday night, now have to play Sunday. Detroit played on Sunday. They're on regular rest. So you missed the 7. You know, my thing here now is, you know, where are we going to go with this 6 right now? You know, since we moved back the extra point, you know, you've seen 6 become a little bit more of a key number. Is there any late buyback where it gets back up to 6.5? or will we see this line continue to fall toward Detroit down to 5.5? I'm going to look toward the dog in this one. Again, it's not a perfect play. I want to be contrarian. I don't want to be with the public, but I do like this move toward Detroit. I think this one might be a close game here. I'm leaning toward taking the points with the Lions.
How about this next game, Josh? Green Bay, Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay at home. You got Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady. Okay, the public's going to bet with Tom Brady, right? Why would you bet against him? But again, it's so different around him. And then you think about these defenses too, the total sitting at 41. How are you looking at this matchup?
Yeah, massive move to the under here, Pritch. You know, it opened at 47.5 early, all the way down to 41. Both teams are 2-0 to the under so far this year. In terms of, you know, one factor here, it's obviously Mike Evans. He's likely to miss this game due to that suspension. So you're missing one of your star wide receivers, a guy who really can affect a total. But now they're at 41, 41.5, somewhere around there. You did kind of miss the boat. What I'm looking toward is Green Bay maybe in a teaser, because this line did open Tom Brady at home laying 3, immediately got down to 2.5. Now some shops are down to 2. I'm interested to see, you know, is there buyback where these 2s get back up to 2.5? But if you do look at these short road dogs getting +3 or less, since 2019, they're 57% against the spread. You also look at these dogs who made the playoffs the previous year, they're 57% in that same time frame. So maybe it's Tom Brady. Again, one thing we've learned over the years, guys, you're not going to make money betting against Tom Brady. Remember last week against the Saints, a lot of respected money, like the points there. I did 2-3 down to 2.5. Well, it didn't matter. Brady covers that number. So it's hard to bet against the GOAT here. I'd be looking toward Green Bay in the points, but I'm kind of looking toward a teaser just in case it's a short, you know, 3-point win with Brady. You can take Green Bay 2.5 up to 8.5, you know, 2 up to 8, go through 3, go through 7. I'd be leaning under. Again, I just don't love that it's fallen so much, but I will look toward the Packers here, either points or on a teaser.
And this has fallen down, the number of shops, Josh, right, down to 2 here, as well as 41 flat. So the movement continues to come down on the under and to Green Bay in that road spot going to Tampa. We'll get you out of here on this last game on Buffalo and Miami. Mike and I doing our look ahead, a preview of that game for Week 3. Buffalo getting a lot of movement this morning, up to 5.5 now on the road in the market. What do you make of that spot for 2-2-0 teams?
So I really like the Dolphins early, guys, because a lot of these books did open 5 and they got down to 4.5. And I'm like, okay, everyone's going to be betting Buffalo. They look fantastic. I'll be honest, I'm scared betting against Buffalo this year. They look so good, both offensively and defensively. Also, if you're on the under yesterday, could they stop scoring? Like it landed, you know, 48 and the total is like 47. Tough beat if you got a late under there. But early movement was to the Dolphins. But then this line shot up overnight, guys. It's now up to -5.5. Does it get to 6? I'm not sure. But I think the point here would be Miami's in a really good contrarian spot. Anytime you see a team that the public loves that's coming off a blowout, you can kind of extract a little bit of inflated line value by betting against those teams. So I'd be leaning Dolphins here. Again, I don't love betting against the Bills. I think, you know, if you're going over 11.5 win total prior to the season, you're now 2-0 and you're feeling good about that. But Miami, obviously what they did in the against the Ravens was super impressive. Tua's MVP numbers, I think, fell from like 40-1 down to like 18-1. But also, guys, divisional dogs and Tua ATS in his career as a dog, 8-3-1. So he's covered a lot of numbers. So it's Miami or nothing for me. I just can't, you know, get behind laying a number after its move with the public. I'm looking toward Miami and crossing my fingers that maybe they can cover that against Buffalo.
And a move up to 53.5 or 54 now is our total as we sit there. Josh, thanks as always, man. Great stuff. We love having you on our Tuesday show.
You guys are the best. Good luck today.
Absolutely. Right. Josh_insights, where you find Josh Applebaum on Twitter, host of VSiN Daily Morning Bets and the Market Insights podcast. You know, we haven't really talked about in depth, Mike, Thursday Night Football.
That's right.
Time for our deep dive preview. Okay. Your first look at Thursday Night Football with a big line movement already between Pittsburgh and Cleveland. We'll discuss next as we wrap up the show here on the Lombardi Line.
Listening to the Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks, unleashes the spirit of Las Vegas with BetMGM Rewards. Every time you make a wager at BetMGM, you can earn BetMGM Rewards points that you can redeem for online bonus credits like free bets. It's never been easier to join the action on the new BetMGM app, featuring a fresh redesign with improved features and quicker navigation. Planning a trip to Vegas? You can also convert your BetMGM points into MGM Rewards points you can use towards dining, shows, and hotel rooms at over 20 MGM resorts located on the Las Vegas Strip and nationwide. BetMGM Rewards is sports betting's premier loyalty program, including exclusive offers, incredible experiences, and valuable perks when you wager with BetMGM. Sign up with BetMGM or log in today to take advantage of BetMGM Rewards. Eligibility restrictions apply. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. We're back for the final time on the Lombardi Line presented by BetMGM. In for Patrick Maher. I'm Ben Wilson. Patrick back on Thursday. Mike Pritchard in for Michael Lombardi. Michael back with us tomorrow. Always fun here on these Tuesdays. You and I hanging out, talking NFL blast. Betting.
Yep, absolutely.
Circus Sports, Book Studios, where we're at downtown Las Vegas. As we get into our Thursday night matchup here, we've seen the line move early from Cleveland laying 3 on the opener up to -5 against Pittsburgh. Divisional matchup Thursday night. Total also seeing some action to the under. Opening 40.5, basically market wide. We're down to 38.5. That was 39 when we started our show today, right at noon on the East Coast, Mike. So the money continues to come in mostly to the under, also to the Browns in that initial move. We'll start with this, though. If you're Cleveland, you come off that game on Sunday where you had a 99.9% win probability, according to ESPN. If Nick Chubb goes down inbounds after getting around the edge from the 12-yard line, the game is quite literally over. It's actually over. Jets out of timeouts. Instead, he scores. You're up 30-17. You miss an extra point. You give up a blown coverage touchdown. You give up an onside kick. You give up another touchdown. And all of a sudden, in about a 10-minute span of real time, the game's over and you're stunned. I don't know if you've ever been a part of a collapse
Never.
Like that. It would have taken a lot for you in your playing days. But what is the locker room going to be like this week coming off such a devastating loss like that? That's kind of where we have to start.
Well,
here.
First of all, it was to the Jets. So how are you going to get over that?
And that.
No, obviously there's issues. I mean, when you lose a game like this, there's issues. I mean, I'm going to sound like Trent Dilfer here. I don't want to, okay. but I'm going to. There's more ways of losing a game than winning a game, right? I mean, that's a little Trent Dilfer for you.
Mm-hmm.
But no, the Cleveland Browns, they lost the game. I mean, and Stefanski's coming out and saying, I should have reminded Chubb and I should have did this, I should have did that. But he's a head coach play caller. A lot on his plate. Chubb, a lot on his plate. I mean, he's carrying the team right now, rushing the football. So I think defensively, too, you want to talk about being overhyped. I believe the Browns defense could be overhyped right now and over talked about in terms of being that good when the secondary and the concepts they have break down. And that's been through history. That's been a trademark of Joe Woods here. So if you're familiar with Cleveland in any way, you know that about that roster. You know that about their coaching staff. And certainly you look at Pittsburgh, they're familiar with Cleveland in that way. But yeah, I think Cleveland has issues to overcome. It's a big number in the division on a Thursday night at 5 here. But on the other side, you got Pittsburgh, too, struggling offensively. It's not a coincidence at all when you have Baker Mayfield struggling offensively, Matt Ryan struggling offensively, Russell Wilson struggling offensively, Atlanta not struggling but could be better offensively, and then Pittsburgh. What do they have in common? They have a new quarterback with a new team. And so now you have a new quarterback with a new team on the road in a division. Now, it happened to work out right. against Cincinnati, but they got, I don't know, 4 or 5 turnovers. I don't see that happening with Brissett throwing the ball. I don't know if he's going to have that many opportunities to turn the ball over. And then Chubb, the way he's running it, I mean, it's incredible what that guy is doing. So I see why the total is drifting down the way it is. I'm trying to find a way for Pittsburgh to cover this number. It's early. Maybe I'll find something. But as of right now, it's tough to lay it with Cleveland, though.
Right.
I know they have issues.
And you talk about the issues on both sides. Pittsburgh at 4.3 yards per play, tied for 30th in the NFL through 2 weeks. You look at the play calling specifically for Cleveland, though. That's where I want to get your take on, where we saw week one, Jacoby Brissett throw 34 times, and the running game accounted for 39 carries. A bit more of a split that you would expect this past week, where Brissett only throws it 27 times. They run 37 times. But still, through 2 weeks, where you have this placeholder quarterback who's been a career backup to bottom end starter in the NFL, and you have arguably one of the best offensive lines in the game. You have arguably the best two-headed monster at running back in Kareem Hunt and Nick Chubb. You're at 55% only running the ball, Mike. How much of a surprise is that for you, watching the way that distribution has played out through 2 weeks?
Well, especially when you are controlling the game and you know, when you're effective rushing the football too, right? And I don't know. I think it's a tendency thing. You know, Stefanski, can he be disciplined enough to call the game that way? At times, you got to throw it. I mean, Brissett, if you look at his numbers, he was efficient. But he did have the mistake, too. But, I mean, Cleveland lost the game. And they lost the game for other factors. I mean, rushing the football, they're going to still do that. And they're very effective doing that. They're going to do that against the Steelers. So, as a bettor, keep that in mind. The Cleveland Browns are going to stay true to what they do. And and what they can do currently with the quarterback situation. So it's extraordinary what they've been able to do. Maybe some more higher percentage passes, 4%. They kind of just keep Pittsburgh off balance, but no, they're going to run the football.
When you think about it, it's not just that they have the good personnel on paper, like mm-hmm. we just talked about with the perception on the O-line in the running back game, but 5.6 yards per carry week one, 5 yards per carry week two. You are getting chunk yardage every single time, and you have a quarterback who you know is not your number one option. He's just there as the game manager placeholder type. It's been a little bizarre to me watching how Kevin Stefanski has still been pretty aggressive throwing the football. And there are certain game states where you have to, like right. at the end of the game against Carolina, end of the game against the Jets last week. But I wonder how you think that plays out against your divisional rival, especially how pace is concerned, where,
right.
as you talked about earlier, you think Pittsburgh will try to slow the pace of this game down, keep the clock moving, limit the possessions, keep the ball on the ground with the strength of your team. Mm-hmm. Because if you're looking to go under here, you probably want those two elements to come together. You expect to get that out of Pittsburgh, but
yeah.
do you expect Stefanski to go to the run more in a spot like this?
I don't know if he'll go to the run more. They'll try to run it. They're going to have to because Brissett's going to do play action anyway. I mean, from a drop back standpoint, Pittsburgh's too complicated, you know, the third and longs or even second and longs. And so you have to make the game easier for Brissett if you can, if you're Stefanski, and that's running the football. But you have to be effective on first down, too. Maybe you change it up that way. Take advantage of first down, the unknown down, and Pittsburgh's guessing a little bit defensively. Maybe you can throw it that way. But I will caution bettors here in terms of, you know, you look at the opponent, Carolina. You look at the Jets, too. Now, they thought they would have the right mindset to stop the run, but they couldn't. Like, can Pittsburgh, who is highly familiar with everything Cleveland does, and they have a willing participant in the Steelers that want to strap up that helmet and put extra air in it, right?
Yeah.
And so from a physical standpoint, who's going to win that? And I think Steelers could be up to the task there. The reason why I'm looking for ways the Steelers can win this game or even cover the number is on the offensive side from Trubisky. You know, it's a new quarterback with a new team on the road, and that's hard to bet or to back. Here, but the points elevated a little bit in the division, though.
Yeah, so instead, you're probably looking more total. It's an again. It's
I'm not going to chase it though.
Tough spot to look at Pittsburgh as we yeah. talk about now getting the 5 points. But as we were just talking about, when you think about pace and you think about mm-hmm. personnel combined with general game flow and play calling here, when you were playing, I have to think that was a pretty stark contrast for certain teams who are looking to go air raid and move the ball quickly. And we've talked about how that applies to teams like Buffalo and where you get some of those really high totals. How much do you think pace does kind of drive and reflect a lot of these general game states where coaches are trying to figure out their,
right.
you know, their strengths and personnel? Like how big of a deal is that with pace in general?
Yeah, I mean, but you think about pace too, it could be so different. Arizona controlled the game. I think they had like 35 minutes of possession time. Same thing with Miami on the road. So they controlled pace, but they had to come back from behind. You see what I'm saying? So mm-hmm. pace is pace, but scoring and capping off drives or generating big plays is such a big part of today's National Football League. Like you can control the pace if you're Cleveland, but what if you're kicking field goals? And then you kick two or three field goals, and lo and behold, you're still down one possession, you know, if you're the Steelers. So I think the Steelers need to be more explosive. In particular, Trubisky needs to take more chances. They're too good on the outside. And couple that, too, with Joe Woods in that secondary that allowed way too many passing touchdowns last year. They were in the bottom tier, and it's got a carryover into this year. So that's why I'm exploring the Steelers.
Yeah, well, and as you're saying, it's our VSiN Pro Tip of the Hour as we wrap up here. A, familiarity, and B, pace of teams. If mm-hmm. if you have similar strategies that combine in certain matchups like that, there are angles to look at, especially when you're looking more so at totals as opposed to sides.
Right.
Now, again, as we talk about this specifically, in this game, totals already dropped so far. I don't know that it'd be really hard-pressed to want to take an under here, but that's our general pro tip. Look for those spots where you have same pace, similar type of personnel, very familiar matchups, and you can find yourself in a position to take advantage of some of these totals out there in the market. Again, VSiN.com/pro tips for all of those, sorted by sport and by show. You're not going to be brave enough, though, to take a stab on Pittsburgh, Mike. You're not going to talk me into it.
I'm leaning right the way right now.
All right. We'll see where you get there on Thursday. For Mike Pritchard, I'm Ben Wilson saying so long. Thanks as well to the whole crew. Matt Sanders, our producer behind the glass. Andrew Ingold, our technical director, among others, leading the charge. Up next, VSiN Big Bets from the South Point.